Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Okay, Professor Anthony Turton, he's a professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State. I'm reading these stories about South African dams. Citizen this afternoon covering 94 out of 144 municipalities in South Africa supply unsafe water. I have to be honest, when I filled a basin or even a glass of water and held it up against a white background, must be honest, it does have a bit of a tinge to it, and I have questioned that. But this is the guy to ask. Good afternoon, Professor. How are you?
Good afternoon to you and the listeners. Thanks for having me. And my answer to your earlier question about the Ark of the Covenant is, where is it at the moment? Is it publicly accessible where it currently is? But I don't want to sidetrack you.
You know what? Our listeners are very smart. Let's ask them that. If you know where the Ark of the Covenant is, you let us know. 34519 is the text line.
I believe it's in Lake Tana in Ethiopia, to the best of my knowledge, but no one's actually seen it. But it's believed to be there. Anyhow, let's not get sidetracked.
Yes, thank you so much. All right, so I have a five-year-old in my brain that asks questions about everything. So maybe we can start, before we talk about the safety and protocols that aren't being upheld at dams. When we have water that comes from the sky in the form of rain and it goes into our drains, what happens to it from the drains? Is it recycled? Is it cleansed? Is it processed? Or does it just flow into the rivers and the sea?
Okay, that's a great question. So all of the water that comes from the rain eventually ends up on the land, either on the land or if you live in a city, it goes down your gutter downpipe onto the paved surface. From the paved surface, it goes across the road where it picks up all the gunge and dirt that's on the road, all the oil and all the kind of, you know, discarded waste on the road. Then it goes down the gutter on the side of the road, and eventually it is discharged to the nearest little stream, which, of course, is a tributary to a river. So all of the rainwater from our cities ends up in the nearest river. That it's all completely polluted with whatever waste you can think of in the city.
And do we rely on the natural, biodegrading agents in rivers to purify that water?
No, our rivers are in fact living biological ecosystems. And the purpose of the National Water Act that was promulgated in 1978 was to restore the biological, ecological integrity of the rivers. That lay at the very heart of the intention of the National Water Act. So it's illegal to operate a river below a certain standard. There's different classes of rivers, and it's a very complicated technical way to classify a river. But nonetheless, we are not allowed by law to have a polluted river. It's as simple as that, if you want to use layman's terms. But unfortunately, we need to look no further than the Hennops River. There's a very successful project running on the Hennops River at the moment. And just Google Hennops River and you'll come across, all these horrific photographs of styrofoam and discarded condoms and personal care products, etc. That all get discarded into the river, and all of that ultimately becomes somebody's drinking source somewhere down the river, but it will get processed through a water treatment plant.
Okay. So where the water in our dams, as you have just explained, the polluted water, rainwater, goes into our drains, into storm drains, and finally finds its way into rivers. Do dams Correct. Only get water from rivers?
Correct. Okay. So a dam is nothing more than a river that has been trapped behind a concrete wall. Simple as that.
Okay. So that ultimately does become our drinking water.
Yes. And of course, another more interesting topic is that all of our sewage gets processed to wastewater treatment plants. 5 billion liters of it every day we produce in South Africa. So 5 billion litres of water goes through our sewage plants every single day and eventually ends up back in the nearest river, which is in all cases upstream of somebody else's drinking water, wherever you are in the country, unless you're in the very, very highest end of the country where you might have water from cleaner sources upstream. So the problem is that we've lost our dilution capacity in the rivers, because in the past, it was accepted that you could dilute your sewage and stuff like that. But now we've lost our pollution capacity, and we're simply overloading our system with waste. When it comes to sewage pollution, you get a particularly specific set of problems associated with that, because all of your medication that is used by society goes through the human body and is only partially metabolized before it's discarded as waste from the body. And the problem with returned sewage, besides the pathogens in the sewage, is the returned pharmaceutical products. Right. And this, of course, is it's an international problem, but it's particularly acute in South Africa.
And hormones. I mean, I remember reading a statistic about the water in Europe. They say that water, if you drink water out of a tap in Europe, it's already been through 12 pairs of kidneys.
Yes, hormones are very, very, very major problem in South Africa, well, anywhere in the world. But, you know, that's one of the problems with recycled sewage. There are ways around that, but it is one of the problems. And none of our bulk water treatment plants in South Africa at the moment, we have about 1,000 bulk water treatment plants in South Africa. They take water from the nearest river and turn it into drinking water. None of them were ever designed to remove sewage contaminated waste from the rivers. However, when we talk about sewage, there's another more probably a bigger risk to the general public. It comes from what's known as cyanobacteria or blue-green algae. And these blue-green algae are very often found in sewage-contaminated rivers. And these are potent little single-cell creatures. And when the conditions are right, when it's warm enough, they go into exponential growth. So 1 billion of them become 2 billion, which then become 4 billion, which become 8 billion and 16 billion, all like in an hour. And that's a very, 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 very rapid exponential growth. And the problem with these little guys is that they, while they're single-celled creatures and smaller than what the human eye can actually see, they produce a potent toxin. And that toxin becomes part of the water and can't be filtered out in our existing water treatment plant. So that's probably our biggest single risk in South Africa today, is this contamination from what is known as microcystin. And people want to Google the word microcystin. Microcystin toxin, this is the toxin that is now coming through from our polluted water. So that's probably a bigger risk, although emotionally we would probably react, a knee-jerk reaction to the disgusting thought of actually drinking sewage. But nonetheless, your real biggest risk is from microcystin. And then there are parts of the country where you've got known urogenital birth defects. So, for example, the University of Pretoria urology department has been doing very, very intensive research in the early 2000s, 2005, 6, 7, 8, around about then. They were doing just this amazing research into the urogenital defects. And these are defects to the female genitalia in newborn babies. And they were looking specifically at the Vembe district. And they found that, if my memory serves me correctly, something like 7.5% of babies born in that area have got a urogenital birth defect, and that was from DDT.
Gosh.
So in other words, we're starting, because we've lost our dilution capacity in our rivers, and because we are just overloading it with more and more and more nasty stuff, we're starting to get these unintended consequences, which are extremely complex to manage. And they're very difficult to actually pin down to say that this problem comes from that particular source of water, because it all gets mixed up.
Gail weighing in, and she says, ew, I shouldn't have listened to your guest, Kathy, as I really enjoy my glasses of tap water. So do I, Gail. And she goes on to say, I'm able to smell when the water's chlorinated, but I haven't smelt it for a while, says Gail. Well, can I tell you something scary, Gail? If you think of the smell of a swimming pool, if you can smell chlorine, it means that it's mixed with urine. You can't smell normal chlorine or chlorinated water. Hashtag just saying. And who can confirm that is my guest, Professor Turton. you with us, Professor?
Yes, good afternoon. I'm sure with you. I've been thinking a little bit while you were at news, and I just wanted to I don't want to cause alarm or anything like that, so I just want to clarify one or two things that I've said. I referred earlier on to that research that had been done into the urogenital birth defects of children.
Yes.
And if you want to just go and verify that, just do a Google search of Well, the professor's name is Rihanna Bormann of University of Victoria. And you just Google the words urogenital birth defects in neonates. A neonate is a newborn baby in the Vembe district. And that will give you all of the accurate statistics. And what it essentially says is that a trained medical doctor is unable to determine the gender of a newborn baby in 7 out of 100 cases. In that area, because you can't just give a visual definition of gender under those circumstances, because the newborn child might manifest with female genitalia but is actually genetically male because of these.
This is one of those cases where we say, where on earth is Erin Brockovich? Maybe Professor Anthony Turton is actually our Erin Brockovich. So why are South African dams not complying with safety standard? Is it basic competence? Are they just incompetent?
What? As with all of these things, it's complex. You know, it's not just a simple one sentence answer. In your earlier intro, you spoke about the color of your water that you're drinking in a glass.
Yes.
And you sort of link that to dam safety. Those are two completely separate issues.
Sure.
So dam safety issue has got nothing whatsoever to do with the water quality. I just want to make it very clear that we're dealing with two completely separate issues.
Yes.
So yes, we do have a deteriorating water quality. Yes, there's no doubt about that. I also want to clarify that water quality in a river is not the same as water quality in a tap, because the water quality in a tap is supposed to have been treated by a processing plant. You mentioned early on about chlorine. I just want to mention about chlorine in and of itself is also quite a controversial topic, because when chlorine is in the presence of organic material, it breaks down into a substance known as a trihalomethane. That's just abbreviated to THM. So halo means salt, Cl is salt, chlorine is salt. So trihalo, got three little halos, trihalomethane is a form of gas. So your THMs are a product of the breakdown of chlorine, and they are carcinogenic, they cause cancer. So that is why it's not good for you to drink your water from a swimming pool. So whenever you can smell chlorine in the water, it's an indication that excessive chlorine is being used, and ultimately over time that can result in THM. So the whole thing about water processing is you're always managing different sets of risks. And even in your intervention itself, you are introducing a new set of risks. So you have to always manage one against the other. You've got to balance the payoff from treating the water with chlorine, for example, versus the risk of overchlorinating. So there's always this balance, and it's a very, very technically complex field. But to answer your question now about why the dam safety issue is relevant now, I was actually privy to the data that was used in the preparation for the article you're referring to, and I was asked to give comment on that data. And from an analysis of the data, it became quite apparent that the loss of capacity within the government department responsible for the authorization of the safety certificates, there's a growing loss of capacity, because you can see an increase in the backlog number of cases that are not processed after the dam owner gives the report that is required by law. So they submit the report to the government department, but then the government department is so overloaded they are unable to process that report. So what happens is over time these reports accumulate, and so you eventually get an official overloaded with work, and they're simply unable to cope. So that's one of the reasons why we have non-compliant dams. Doesn't necessarily mean to say that the dam is dangerous, it's going to fall down. It just means that it's not necessarily certified. And then, of course, the other thing that was very evident to me from the analysis of the raw data is that the biggest single cause of the problem, or the biggest single problem owner, for want of a better word, in fact, are government departments or SOE, state-owned enterprises. They are the ones who own the dams that are mostly non-compliant. And this raises a very, very important technical question. That is the role of the Department of Water and Sanitation as the regulator of water, because they are they are a referee, but they also a player in that space. So for a long time, we've been calling, when I say we, in the SA Business Water Chamber, we've been calling for the creation of an independent water regulator that is neither referee nor player.
Professor Turton, I would love to finish this conversation, but I'm looking at the time and we are completely out of time. I'm sorry. But we are going to get you back, I have no doubt. And thank you for not being a stranger to Chai FM. You're always available and so knowledgeable. And thank you for being generous and just sharing your knowledge with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That's Professor Anthony Turton, Professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State.